Welcome back to Three Black Dots with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
Welcome back. We are so excited to have you back with Three Black Docs, and welcome. We have our special guest, Dr. Erica Dressa, who's here helping us to really work out some details. This month, July, is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month, and she is a child and adolescent, I don't even know how to get that right, adolescent and child psychiatrist. And we are so grateful that she's here to help us talk about strategies that we can help our community. It's one of these topics we don't oftentimes talk about in the Black community. So we at Three Black Docs, we're really excited to have you on. So thank you, Erica. You've been a friend to all of us, and we're so excited to have you back with us on the podcast for part two of the discussion. Yeah. Dr. Tiff, what you got?
Yeah. Okay. So as usual, Karen is nice and polished. Okay. So here's the real deal. Erica. Really, you know, you're on here to give us specific advice because I'm like, I need to pick the brain of a child psychiatrist.
She wants some free medical advice. Oh, yeah. Wow.
And one of the benefits of having been to medical school is like, you know, people in every specialty.
That, yeah.
So when I saw this stat on the news about, you know, Black kids and suicide, and I have two Black kids, you know, boys, sons, Zanetta, you know, has two young kids too, boy and a girl, and Karen, her daughter is all grown up, but you know, still. So, this is something that, you know, I was like, who do we know? What child psychiatrist? I was like, oh, Erica, we need some tips. And since we started recording these for podcasts, we might as well share it in this context. So really, that's why we're all sitting here looking so intently and taking notes, because these are the questions that we want to know personally. And I think there's a lot of value that everyone can gain from that. So for me, you know, what I'm really concerned about is wanting to know what are some warning signs to look for. And I don't think that this is really just for parents either. I think this is for anyone who, you know, is involved in a child's life. So you don't even necessarily need to be a parent. You can be, you know, a close friend of a family, an aunt, you know, a teacher, you know, anyone who's involved in kids' lives. So what is it that we should be looking out for signs of depression? You mentioned it earlier. Does it vary by like the kid's age? Like if there's younger kids versus adolescents, or what things should we just kind of really clue us in to say, what's going on? Something's going on here.
Yeah. Absolutely. And yes, there is a difference depending on the developmental stage of the child. So for kids who are a little bit younger, your preschoolers, and yes, I did say preschool, there are young little kids who can struggle with depression. The youngest I've seen was about 3 years old.
Oh.
And that baby just had no interest in playing, just did not care about any of the toys that were right in front of him. It was really, really tough. Temper tantrums. And we know that with the terrible twos, that's a part of life. Temper tantrums can be very normal, but we're talking temper tantrums that are above and beyond, that are very pervasive, that happen every day, that can cause impairment at home or at school and preschool. So temper tantrums, challenges with sleep. As we move and progress up through school-age children, they can also have irritability, agitation, sometimes aggression. They may not be as interested in food. Maybe they're not eating as much, maybe sleeping too little or more than usual. And as we move up into adolescence, they too can have a lot of irritability and agitation. So that's a common theme.
Yes.
As well as... Oh. Yes.
Sorry.
Well,
I've been there, done that.
I can't wait to see Tiff.
Like, oh God.
You can tell.
Yes. I'm like, oh yeah. PTSD.
Yes. Been there, done that. Yes, yes. And so many parents ask, okay, well, what's normal, typical teenage behavior, right? Because all teenagers are moody. Yeah. But if you're also noticing that they are socially withdrawing, so they are not as engaged with their friends or with family, maybe they're spending more time in their room. Maybe they're spending more time sleeping. The room is always dark. Maybe they're listening to like really sad and dark music all the time. Another thing is looking at their grades. For some students, you may notice a steady decline in their grades. So they used to do well. They were excited about school. And then all of a sudden, they just really don't care. Sometimes there could be a sense of apathy. And then with that, their grades start to decline. Mm-hmm. They may start engaging in behaviors to try to treat themselves. So especially adolescents, they may start smoking marijuana or start drinking or hanging out with other crowds to try to, in a way, numb their feelings. Mm-hmm. So those are all things that we can see. And then, of course, if they start engaging in self-harm behaviors such as cutting, scratching, headbanging, or even talking about suicide thoughts, it may be vague, such as I wish I were never born, or not really seeing value in their lives. They may not be planful about their future, maybe not thinking that they even have a future. And I think we're starting to see that when we think about Black youth in particular and all of the things that they've been exposed to. So the Ahmaud Arbery, the right. Breonna Taylors, you know, some of them really don't think that they are going to live long because they think that they're going to be a victim of police brutality, that they may not make it. So these are very real things for them. So if they're having a hard time thinking about the future, that they don't have anything to look forward to, then those can all be warning signs.
And what are the steps to take when you see that happening? Because I don't know mm-hmm. the number, but I know there are not many child and adolescent psychiatrists in the country. And probably the number of Black child and adolescent psychiatrists, you could probably count.
So,
you know, if you notice this, what do you go to your pediatrician? Do you look for a psychologist or a psychiatrist or what? What do you do? Do you go online and look for, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. So there are probably about 8,000 practicing child psychiatrists in the country. So about 10 psychiatrists per 100,000 kids.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Really?
Wow. Yes. And then when we think about Black psychiatrists, now we all know each other, so we go to conferences. There are not that many of us. So we probably make up, Black psychiatrists make up about 2% of total psychiatrists.
So that's worse than oncology. It's 3% oncology.
2%.
Wow.
Yeah. So needless to say, there is a great, great need for people to go into this field. And there just aren't enough of us. So there are going to be some areas, especially in more rural areas, where there's just not going to be a psychiatrist at all. So you may actually have to take them to a pediatrician or taking them to a therapist. There may not be a psychologist or maybe a social worker, LMFT, you know, there are all different kinds of therapists and counselors that can see kids.
And but what is LMFT? That's the challenge.
Licensed marriage and family therapist. Okay. Yes. Okay. And, you know, the thing about services, that's a barrier, right? When we think about, okay, why are these Black kids having such, you know, higher rates of suicide? What's happening? Well, we talked about stigma, but the other thing is a barrier to care. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Number one, as I just mentioned, we don't have enough of us. We don't have enough psychiatrists. But number two, we really know that about maybe 80% of kids who need help for psychiatric services probably are not receiving services. That number is insane. So we have to do a better job. It's crazy. So we have to do a better job as family members to bring our kids, but also as providers. And we're three Black docs. So that means there are some doctors out here who have biases in terms of what they ask and what they assess in terms of youth of color. You know, so thinking about depression and PTSD, eating disorders, we have to assess for these things in our Black youth. We don't assess for them, they're not just going to get treated.
One of the challenges that we have in North Carolina, as you know, is the very high uninsured rate. But even with insurance, there can be some barriers to, you know, getting psychiatric care. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of folks out here who are uninsured, and I'm sure that number is increasing tremendously given all of the job losses that we're seeing with COVID. So this is going to be a really huge problem. We're talking about this pandemic, but I do think that there is also a pandemic in terms of mental health and just not being able to get services that folks really need. There are some ways in which people can get services. So in North Carolina, for instance, there are managed care organizations that they can go to see if they can be plugged in with an agency that's able to provide services for them. But there also are a lot of nonprofit agencies right now. I know Taraji P. Henson, she's actually providing a lot of funds to people who can't afford treatment to be able to access mental health services, along with Dr. Alfie Breland Noble, who also had her training. She's one of my mentors, had her training at Duke. She also has the ACOMA project. They also are providing some funds for individuals, and she's already been in touch even with Catalyst to find out ways in which we can get some of her patients seen. So there are ways that people can access services. There are a lot of people out there who will take sliding scale. So if you don't have insurance or if you're underinsured, there are providers who will work with you and will do a sliding scale. So it really is a matter of calling around. If you do have insurance, the best thing to do is to reach out to your insurance company to see who is in network.
Because
a lot of us are not on every panel. So that's an issue as well.
Okay. And so, Dr. Erica,
for our listeners, they can go to Three Black Docs and just kind of look. We did have a list of a few free resources for Blacks as we kind of thinking about Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. So they can go to Facebook and look at that. And we'll also make sure that in the notes, so if you wouldn't mind afterwards sending us a few of the resources that you had mentioned, so we can make sure they in the notes of the podcast, so that for listeners that they can listen to that. I'm sorry, Dr. Z, go ahead.
So Tiffany and I are from Louisiana. And for our people in Louisiana, if you think, you know, your child may be showing some warning signs, how do you determine whether you look for a therapist versus going to the pediatrician or, you know, other kinds of organizations? What's the difference between them, and how can you determine which may be the best stop for your child?
That's a great question. I think pediatricians are great. They definitely have training in mental health. The challenge is they have very limited time. So they are not going to be able to dedicate an hour to an hour and a half to doing a full psychiatric assessment in the same way that a psychiatrist or a therapist might be able to do. And sometimes, because they are so rushed, you know, if a kid comes in, for instance, thinking that they have ADHD and they're having attentional issues, it's like, okay, well, that can be ADHD, but are they having attention issues because they're depressed? Are they having attention issues because their thoughts are so distracted with anxiety? So we really do have to sometimes take a little longer to tease out, because it could be really challenging, especially with kids trying to tease everything out. So sometimes a pediatrician could be a good first stop, since they're going to their pediatrician regularly anyways, to maybe get referrals. A lot of pediatricians know people in a community that they like working with, so it's a good place to get a referral. I think sometimes going to a therapist can be the easiest route before getting to a psychiatrist, just because, as I mentioned, there's so few psychiatrists, child psychiatrists available. Sometimes a therapist can be a good first place to stop too, because the reality is, generally, we want to treat with therapy first, or to do a combination with therapy and medication management. So usually it's nice to be able to just get an evaluation to determine if therapy could be helpful. And then after a few sessions, if that kid is not really making significant progress, then of course they can step it up to a psychiatrist and consider medication management. Of course, there are some other, psychiatric illnesses like ADHD, for instance, where medication generally is going to be warranted. But again, therapy can always be helpful and a good place to start.
And go on, Tiffany.
I had a question. And this is not so much yet for me, for the age that my kids are at the moment, but it will be in that social media and cyberbullying and how much that plays into what we're seeing in terms of depression and suicidal attempts with the kids. And, what we should be doing about that as parents. You know, I think parents should be monitoring social media accounts and all that stuff, but my kids aren't old enough to have it yet. So Mm-hmm. I haven't had to think about it too much, but it's coming. Yeah. So,
So
how much of that trend do you think has social media or cyberbullying contributed to it? And what should parents do about that?
That's an excellent question. Well, as we all know, these kids who are in Generation Z and they really heavily depend on social media as a means of connecting with one another. And that's particularly true since COVID. I mean, these kids have now been out of school for, 4 months? So that means the majority of their interaction is all online, whether they're playing games together online, they're on TikTok or, you know, Snapchat, they're just doing everything via social media. That is their main way of socializing and connecting with each other. I think the challenge with social media is, as we know, most people on social media tend to just want to post like all the positivity, all the great things that they're doing. Everybody's living their best life and having the best summer ever. So right. As you can imagine, that can probably be pretty challenging when we start to compare. And I've even been guilty of this, like, man, everybody seems to be having their whole act together during this quarantine. Right. And I'm up here struggling with the Zoom life all day, you know, people making bread.
And that's why Dr. Z's like... over there eating popcorn. You see Dr. Z's eating popcorn.
She's like, tell me. Yeah. She is giving me so much information that I muted myself and I'm eating my popcorn. Okay.
Eat your popcorn.
She's just like,
let me go back to you. Right. Yes. Am I
cherry coke? Go ahead. I'm
getting all the deep.
I'm taking notes too, though. So
me too. Yeah. But if y'all are listening to this and not watching, Zanetta's getting her whole life snacking.
Hey.
Yes. Yes. Three Black Docs. Roll it.
This is good.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, Dr. Erica, go ahead. We are sorry to interrupt, my dear. I had this big grin on my face because she is literally just sitting there like, OMG. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Girl, is she making me want some popcorn right now? I was like, okay, after this, I'm going to have to pop some popcorn.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
So, yeah, you know, but when we see these posts of our friends and our colleagues, we tend to compare and we tend to think about all the things that we don't have or the fact, you know, if we are struggling or experiencing some negative emotions that maybe we should feel ashamed of that or, you know, feel in some kind of way that we're just not measuring up to our friends. So the comparisons can be real. But cyberbullying is really off the chain for these kids. I mean, they can post all sorts of things and rumors and pictures. It can get very, very ugly, very fast. And I think Black youth can be exposed to that, especially now with all of the racial unrest. There are so many things that are happening on social media, name calling. I mean, all sorts of things that I think are just leading to higher rates of stress in these kids. The other thing, though, I think is we see a lot of cyberbullying in the Black LGBTQ group. So we see a lot of that, and that can lead to not only in that group, but it can definitely lead to depression or anxiety and sometimes even trauma. Bullying can impact a young brain in the same way that physical abuse, emotional abuse, or sexual abuse can impact the brain. Wow. So these are very real issues that can cause a lot of impairment in our youth.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about stigma, you know, in the Black community about mental illness, but I want to bring up their stigma. And also, what are your thoughts about, you know, needing to talk within families? Because what we talk about all the time in oncology is knowing your family history around oncology, right? Because genetics and like it impacts what is going on with you and what you might need to do in terms of your cancer screening. But can you talk about that in terms of psychiatric illness?
Absolutely. Yes. Genetics. I ask about genetics all the time. I want to know family history. And it's really interesting. Some families are very open about it, but some families really don't know. they're like, okay, we had that Uncle Johnny who just kind of like stayed in his room all the time and something wasn't ever really
crazy uncle.
With him.
The crazy uncle. Yes, we all have the crazy uncle. Yep.
Like,
I know.
We just left Uncle Johnny alone. We don't really know what he had.
Right.
Right. There, I think there's also a generational piece. I think we're seeing much more on TV and on the news about mental health. But I do think there's a generational aspect to that. And our baby boomers and sometimes even Generation X folks don't necessarily want to talk about what happened in the family due to usually shame. And shame is a silencer, you guys. It silences us in so many ways. If we can break that silence.
Shame is a silencer. I love
it. It is a silencer. Yes.
We're done. That's all we need. Like, right? Shame is a silencer. We're done. Right? So minority mental health awareness, we got to talk about this stuff.
This is like
we have to talk about it. We have to talk about it. And guess what? I think it empowers our kids too. If we tell them, hey, look, we have a family history of substance abuse. So you're going to have friends who are going to want to offer, you know, to offer you a drink or offer you some marijuana. Really think about that, because we have a history of family members who have been addicted. And because of their addictions, look at what happened to Uncle Johnny. Look at what happened to all of these people. So if we can have those conversations and help them look for things to say, hey, not to scare them, but just so they could be more aware to say, hey, we have a family history of bipolar disorder. So we do need to be able to watch for high highs and low lows. Here's what that looks like. And if you do have, if you do feel that way, it's okay to come and talk about it. So I think it's really important. And it's amazing how many people I talk to who just don't know. They don't have a clue about their family history. And family genetics plays such a big part in terms of depression and anxiety, ADHD, all of the psychiatric illnesses. There's some sort of genetic component there.
But even what you said, like shame is a silencer, right? So there are even parents who are not having those conversations with their children, right? So it's not even about like, we're not talking generation, we're talking about parent to child. Sometimes there are conversations that are not being had. And oftentimes it holds us back, even in terms of what we can accomplish, right? So we know that there's been so much trauma in the Black community. We see it, like you talk about every day. We see our children are watching it on television, watching Black lives get snuffed out. And these are things that have been happened for generations. And we oftentimes in the Black community talk about it, not only because of shame, but also because it is in some ways re-traumatizing to relive it. We had that conversation in one of our earlier podcasts where, you know, just going back and reliving the stuff, the microaggressions even that we've experienced as in academia can be traumatic. So, you know, I want to shift just a little bit because you talked even in your life about transitions that you've made and you know, and I think it takes a lot of strength to make transitions in life. But one transition is, how do you transition out of the shame? How do you transition out of the past traumas that we may have experienced, even as children, our own mental health anguishes? Like, how do you take what may have happened to us as children and really help to transition so that we can be adults that are living life and living it well?
Yes. I think that's really great. And when I think about that, Dr. Karen, I think of resiliency. How do we build resiliency in the midst of the trauma? And a big part of that is self-reflection. We have to create space for ourselves. So we talked about last time, creating space for our children to talk and for them to be open. But do we really create that space for ourselves to really reflect and say, what am I experiencing right now? Because you're right. This has brought up all sorts of memories from my training at Duke, things that I had like just put away. People flat out, no, but you know, I mean, seeing all these things, like you said, it brings up microaggressions, so many issues that we've experienced and fear, you know, of what could happen to not only us, but like to my nephew and to my family members. I mean, this is real. So how do we become resilient in that? And we have to assess what's really happening inside. We have to take the time just to be still and just reflect. just to reflect, to say, okay, what is happening for me? Mm-hmm. Am I anxious? Am I scared?
Dr. Z, talk about that, because you got excited about that, Dr. Z, when she talked about just being still. I know that resonated for you. You were thinking, oh, Jeremiah, yeah, I know. Girl,
Well, of course, you know, be still and know that I am God.
That's right. That's it.
Yes.
But it is, like, I think, especially for me, I am always going. Mm-hmm. And when I stop, I go to sleep. And any time that I take, you know, just quiet time, I actually feel a little bit anxious. Like I'm not being productive. Like, oh, you know, there's so much more that I need to do. And I have to battle against myself just to, you know, have that quiet time.
Okay, can you listen to what Erica says here? Because you and I have had that conversation. And you don't listen to me because I'm not a psychiatrist.
But I'm an oncologist.
So
I was eating my popcorn on mute, no, taking it all in.
But I'm going to let you listen to Erica on this.
I'm trying to be self-aware.
Yes.
I don't want to have the shame.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you know, even when you were talking about addiction, though, Erica, you know, Tiffany and Karen know why I don't drink, but it is because it actually, there's a lot of fear, right? So I've seen addiction, not necessarily in my immediate family, but I've seen it, and it's pretty pervasive within, you know, some aspects of my family. And I think that I have tendencies that it just makes me want to avoid things altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think within our communities that we talk a lot about coping strategies, just, you know, the way that you talk today. So yeah, my coping strategy is just abstinence altogether, because I'm afraid that I may not be able to handle some small things. So I'll just avoid it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's a lot of fear.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So listen, we have 5 minutes left. And here's what I'm gonna have Dr. Erica respond to that, but then I want Dr. Tiffany and Dr. Zanetta to wrap us up with one thing that you learned from Dr. E. Like, what's a takeaway that you want our listeners? What's your like big takeaway from tonight that you learned that you really want our listeners to kind of go with? But I want go ahead, Dr. E. Go ahead and respond to what Zanetta was saying.
Yes. Well, we talked a little bit about the self-reflection. I think the other part is acceptance. When we can accept where we are, then we don't have to live in shame. We don't have to silence ourselves, because we could say, okay, this is a reality. I have these issues in my family, and as a means of protecting myself, I'm making this decision because I don't want to go down that path knowing my genetics. Right. And if we are able to have that awareness, as you do have, and then the acceptance, then it can lead to changes in our behavior. And that can be, okay, what are the things that I need to do to help ground myself when I'm feeling anxious? What are the things I need to do to make sure I can model for my children how to live in a society that is being marked by all of this racism right now? And I'm scared for my boys. So how do I settle within myself so I could teach them how to be resilient in the midst of all of this? So we have to model children. And in doing that, we have to be open and honest about what it is we're experiencing and accept it, and then do something about it. Mm-hmm. Engage in some coping strategies.
That's a word. All right, Dr. Tiff, what do you want listeners, you know, who are listening to the podcast or watching on YouTube, what's your main takeaway?
I got a few
to walk away from. I said one.
I said not one. Two.
How you gonna limit her takeaway?
Look, the podcast is my idea to
stop. Uh-oh.
Take away limitations.
No. Okay. So first of all, in terms of like the kids and mental illness in the Black community, for me, it's really trying to remove the stigma around it, and for us to be able to talk about it, you know, more freely in the Black community, which is, you know, part of the reason that we wanted to do this, part of the reason that I'm glad there is a minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And I think it's so important for all of us to do this, even if it's not in our wheelhouse, in our specialty or anything like that, because we do need to remove the stigma. We do need to talk about it. You know, we need to put it out there. We need to know our histories. And I think you're absolutely right, Dr. Erica, when you say that the older generations don't know, like, because, you know, and I don't actually think it's through anybody's fault, but back in the day, they just didn't diagnose. They didn't, you know, go down the route of looking for, you know, getting psychological evaluations or naming what it is. It was just your crazy uncle or your crazy aunt who sat in the back of the house while everybody was there. But now, you know, we have more resources, we have more awareness, and more knowing of what to look for and when we should start to evaluate, right, and try to get to the bottom of that. So it's removing the stigma. It's when we notice things in our kids, making sure those things are evaluated, which I'm doing myself, you know, in my own family. And also for the adults, it's making space for yourself, just like you said, for wellness, for stillness, and to kind of evaluate like where you are and what's going on with yourself. I think that's so important.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, Dr. for Z. me, my theme of 2020 is shame is a silencer.
That's right.
Shame is a silencer. Oh. And just like Tiffany said, creating a space. Right. So I don't want my son to hide things from me.
Yeah.
Like I need him, my daughter as well, but I need them to be able to tell me what's going on. Because I'm afraid for them. And you know, I think one of the benefits of COVID has been that it's been nice as a family. Like we've had more, we can't go anywhere. So we're playing, we're talking, and and really trying to make sure that, you know, when they grow up, this won't even be a conversation. Right? Like they'll know that there is no stigma, you know? If you are sad, you deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Point blank. Yeah. So I cannot thank you enough for coming to speak with us.
Yes.
This has
been
fantastic.
And let me just give you my last takeaway as well. I think one of the things, as you know, from my advocacy standpoint, is really important for folks to know that there are resources out there. For those who may be uninsured or underinsured, please know that there are indeed some resources where you can actually go and get some assistance. We'll make sure that on the Three Black Docs podcast that we actually put those links into the information so that you can have them. But yes, we are so grateful to Dr. Erica for joining us, child and adolescent psychiatrist extraordinaire with Catalyst, co-founder and amazing friend. We are so grateful for you. Any last kind of comments that you want to leave us with?
Oh, well, first of all, I just love you guys so much. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here, for highlighting mental illness and mental health awareness and wellness. And we can be resilient. We have the tools. It's in our genes. It's in our DNA to be resilient.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the thing. We oftentimes think about mental health in terms of the things that go wrong, but it's also important. That's all the things that we have within us that can help us just manage and get through it and to live through it and survive and thrive.
I think that's a great way to end it.
Yes. Come on. Yes. I think, Dr. Z, you need an amen on that one.
Yeah,
amen.
I do.
An amen. She says the amen.
Yeah.
Yes.
I am good.
All right, all. Good. Thank you so much for joining us on Three Black Docs.
Thank you.
Three Black Docs plus one. Thank you so much, Dr. E. We appreciate it.
Love you. Love you too.
See you Sunday.
See you Sunday.
Three Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Three Black Docs is produced by Wings Productions.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.